Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're addicted to beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We are the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading our Patreon-selected book of the month, Trainspotting, by what the fuck is this guy's name again? Irvin Welsh, which is
even
confusing because it's in Scotland.
Yeah, maybe he is Welsh, I don't know.
No, he's no.
And I'm starting with the beer.
Oh.
So, this book is called Trainspotting, so... If
that happens before the train period.
I was thinking it.
That was not what I was thinking. Okay, so if you're looking for a train and you spot one, what is it you might say?
Train.
That's a train.
Might say, "I see you" by Finn Beck. You might be able to tell. I went to the beer store before reading the book. So I could go by name only. Turns out, Trainspotting is one very short chapter, like the second to last chapter or something like that.
It's because they couldn't use the working title, which was Fucking Kunt, which is the other 80% of the book.
This is I See You. It's a double IPA from Finback with cantaloupe, and it's very nice.
Oh, cantaloupe. That's what connection could be for this book.
Yeah. It's a Scottish one, yeah. Mm.
I actually just did, I just searched cunt in the ebook. To see how many, and it could not stop scrolling. Like how many times it found the word, and I've
That's
never
the word
seen,
they spelled right.
I've never seen this incredible contraction because I start typing it, you know, like it auto like starts predicting what you mean, and it had the word kunzf, like more than one cunt, and contracted with have, like these cunts have. Been cunts. These cunts. That's a word in the book. Like, look at all the different permutations of cunt that it comes up with. It's like, did you mean cunt? Cunts? Cuntle? Cunts? Cunts? Apostrophe s? Cunts? Apostrophe after the s? It's incredible. Sorry, that's. I can't stop. All right. So, how's the beer, Nate?
It's good. Yeah, it's good beer.
So this book is gibberish. It's like if Hagrid had oral surgery and then fell down a flight of stairs, and then you're like, "Tell me that story again, Hagrid." That's what it sounds like. Did you guys do the physical book or did you all do the audio book?
I did the audio book.
I did a digital book, which wasn't a choice there.
I meant, like, but did you read it or did you listen to it?
I read it. It was hard. You had to really pay attention, and then still didn't work.
I read the book probably like 10 years ago, and it took a while, but like you get used to it as it goes on. It's like any other like book that has weird language stuff. But I actually found the audiobook way easier to understand than the times when I was like,
oh, yeah.
It's a guy talking, and you could tell so much more from tone and also how to pronounce those words.
Yeah.
Because when you're like, what is it, Dinay? And he's like, Dinay, fuck the cunt, or whatever he says, you know. It's much more understandable.
It's a declension? Dinay, denorum?
The Dinay, it's like the cani, the deny. <they're>, So this was our poll winner. So someone's thanking poll voters later.
The poll was movies that are books and one's better, or maybe it's a show. Yeah.
We're almost at the end of the podcast. We've run out of things. We've run out of everything.
This has been on our to-read list for like 5 years, and I don't know why.
I think it's just a famous book.
Yeah.
The book came out in 93. I think most people, if you are more familiar with the movie, which came out shortly afterwards in 96, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And the movie makes more of a plot out of this book. The book is really just a bunch of shit happening.
I was wondering.
Have you seen the movie?
I saw it a long time ago, and I was going to watch it before this, but I didn't get a chance. And also, it was $4, so.
Oh, fuck that. You can buy heroin with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. So I hear. Yeah, I remember it. I remember being pretty good, and like it is universally like people like it. But I didn't remember it being this confusing.
I don't remember. I also had similar plans, but then we have a newborn, so I wasn't watching fucking anything. It certainly wasn't going to be like...
Show your newborn Trainspotting.
Yeah, I mean, no, he can't even see like me. He can't see colors yet. He's not going to
know. Can't see
like,
the train.
Hey, what's that white powder, Papa? But We didn't get around to watching it. But I don't remember if the movie is as out of sequence as the book is. You know, it's just kind of backwards.
No, I don't think it is.
But it came out, it tells the story. I mean, the main character in the movie, certainly, in the book, I guess, is Mark Renton, a.k.a. Rent Boy.
Which just sounds like a gay prostitute.
That's what it is. I mean, that's what they call him that.
Oh, that makes sense.
It's just a fucking
joke.
It's like if your name, like if like whatever your name is closest to and people want to fuck on you, that's what they're going to call you.
Hmm.
Like if you have a name that is that easily adapted into an insult. There was a guy my dad grew up with whose name was John Dick. And like, man, that's not even fucking fun.
Jack Dick?
John Dick. Well, I mean, Jack Dick.
Yeah.
Who he then became a teacher.
Mr. Dick. Ooh, that's going to be hard.
But he changed it. He obscured it. Children would never figure out.
To Mr. Vagina.
It was Dixon. Which is like, oh, they'll never do anything with that. But he literally changed his name.
Mr. Dixon is my father.
My father said, listen, Dick, son. Yeah, my dad told me a story once of getting into a fight with him after like enough people teased him, and he was just the most recent one to say, yeah, a lot of dicks live on that block. And they got like, God damn it. Punched him. I mean, it's a fucking horrible name. But yeah, so Rent Boy is just what they call him because they're dicks, because that's what male friends do to each other. And he is, amongst every other, like every other character in this, a heroin addict. And they're like, I don't know, college-ish age, young people.
And they're early 20s, maybe.
Yeah. And so the half of the book is him hanging out with people and doing heroin. Or trying to get heroin.
Or not doing heroin for him.
Well, that's the other half, yeah.
And there's a bunch of other characters where it switches to their respective for other chapters. And they don't tell you who it is most of the time. And so you're like, what's happening? Who is this?
I suspect if you know those, because it's not all in one vernacular or whatever.
There were chapters that were written in more traditional English, you know, you can understand. And there's like two or three characters that speak in like such a thick Scottish phonetic accent that it takes a long time to even grasp what they are saying. If you listen to it, you know, as you said, it's understandable, like you get it, but like when you're reading it, it's like, whoa, what are these words? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I didn't ken what they mean half the time.
Yeah.
So Nate, can you shepherd us?
No.
I'm gonna start talking about Kant again because that's most of the book.
So all right,
that's the part I got.
First part, the like first like chapter of the book is really like sets the scene is Mark. He is though. Okay. I had a really hard time keeping track of who was who. And I think that's just kind of everybody. So it took me a little while to be like, oh wait, this is a different person. Shit.
The ones with the thick accents are Rent Boy and Sick Boy. The other guys have less accent. I think
you'll be reading it like a chapter will be from Mark's perspective, and then the next chapter it's like I did this, and you go, oh, it's still Mark, and then all of a sudden it's like, and Mark was there, and you're like, oh fuck.
So Mark and his buddies are watching a video, and they're like, let's go get some heroin. Which actually we need to go visit. This is like, you know, like first page. It's like, we need to go visit Mother Superior, and it's like, wait, what? But of course, that just means the guy, the nickname of the guy who sells them the heroin. And so they go to the shooting gallery, and then they all get some heroin, and then they shoot up.
You remember why they called him Mother Superior?
I do not remember.
Because he had a drug habit for so long.
Yeah.
It's like, that's pretty funny.
It is funny. They've been druggies, but they've been junkies for not that long. They could still be clever about it, as opposed to...
Also, I mean, I imagine he had that nickname for a lot longer than they've been junkies.
Like, what an odd, that's a creative nickname. Kind of thing that probably doesn't usually happen in real life.
And so they go and they shoot heroin, and then it starts to, like, describe their incredibly just sad lives. So Mark, he like, goes, so he's on the dole, And there was some joke about, oh, yes, I don't think it was this very first chapter of the book, but it's like, oh, and then this friend went to university and got an English degree. So now he's on the dole. and then he goes and gets shopping, and he's like really like preparing himself to just like, well, he's like kind of sober, so he can just like do heroin for a week and stuff like that. You know, he buys like really cheap things and at the grocery store. But then he starts to feel the withdrawal symptoms, and so he goes to see his like drug dealer, and this whole thing about like, you know, he's going to be a super fucking asshole because he knows how much I need the drug.
Well, this is after he's decided he's going to get clean.
I feel like I was not. Yeah, was this the very first chapter? I think the first chapter.
They bounce around a little. Yeah, when they go back to the dickhead guy, he's like, I need to get clean. I'm going to prep everything, but I need to get one last dose so that I can ride out the worst of, you know, the withdrawal, yeah. Which doesn't make sense, but, you know, junkie life.
No. That's yeah. I like how one of the things he needed was, like, buckets to vomit in, but another one was...
A bucket
like,
for vomit, a bucket for piss, and a bucket for shit.
But he also needed, like, a gallon of ice cream. He's like, which will melt and be drunk and be drunk later. Like, he just planned on drinking melted ice cream at some point.
Well, this is their common, you know, the local myth of, like, what do you need to get through withdrawal? Which is a much bigger scene in the movie, I feel like. But in this one, they're like, you need to get all these canned foods and things you can throw up and eat easily.
He's trying to cold turkey it. So it's yeah, like you have yeah. to go... If you could, like, lock yourself away
like
from
nail
it...
nail the door shut.
72 hours or whatever the number they imagine, then you'll be done. It's like one bad... It's like ripping off a Band-Aid. That's not how it works.
Heroin Band-Aid.
So he goes to the drug dealer.
I love that
but
band.
But he can't actually get any heroin. So instead the guy sells him opium suppositories. And he's like, what? What are those? Like, oh, that's how you do it.
Have you ever heard Louis C.K. had a bit about taking opioid suppositories? And he's like going on, it's like the greatest feeling in the world. Like, all of the pain in your body disappears and there's just euphoria. And it starts at your asshole.
And I thought the weird thing about it is, as this next scene will show, like, heroin makes you constipated.
He hasn't shit in days, it says at one point in this scene.
Yeah. Because that's what opiates do. They make you not shit. So a lot of time when you're in the hospital or I just had something and you're on painkillers, they also give you laxatives because otherwise you get blocked up. And so these guys are just shooting heroin all the time. Most of the time they're not shitting at all. And then when he gives these suppositories, it has the opposite effect.
So he gets the opium suppositories, puts them in, and then is like, now I've got to go home. But then he has like, he feels like he really has to shit. And this next scene was the most disgusting thing I've ever read. Although there were other very disgusting scenes in this book too. But this was like, holy, this is like chapter two. And it's like, holy shit.
Oh, it's number two.
It is number two, where he finds the closest bathroom is also the world's most disgusting bathroom. And there's like
guys,
literally piss on the floor.
Guys are pissing into it. They haven't even walked into the room. They're just standing in the doorway and pissing into the room.
It's because the toilet's full and it's not flushing. So it's overflowing. So there's pissing all over the floor. So he has to wade through the piss to get to the clogged toilet, which is clogged full of shit already.
Then he has horrible diarrhea, which was, of course, his description of like... was pretty funny.
It's like days worth of shit too. So
I feel like Mike, you're bringing up some points.
No, I'm going to see if I can find any, but I'm trying to be good and not interrupt. Let me just find them. Cause this part I was listening to, which listening to the audiobook is fucking hysterical.
Do they say pish
so
all the time?
Funny. Pish. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard Scottish people say pish.
That sounds like Sean Connery talking. He's talking pish. I see. I don't know what word he uses for diarrhea that I could search for it.
Just search for suppository.
That's actually a good idea. I suppose.
He shits in an off-track betting place.
Oh, I like this line. I was tempted to swallow the suppositories, but I rejected this notion almost as soon as it crossed my mind. They were designed for anal intake. And there was still enough of the waxy stuff on them to suggest that I'd no doubt have a hard time keeping them Dune.
Well, this is, he does that because after you shit them all out, he has to then, he remembers, oh, I need those. So he has to then go fishing for them.
In the movie, I feel like this was like almost like a dream sequence. Like he goes into the toilet.
Yeah, it's a little trippy. In this, he just, you know, reaches around inside the butt porridge bowl there. And he's like, oh, and he washes them
off. Porridge is like, too cold.
It's like, I should. It's hopefully not too cold. And then he washes them off. He's like, I could take these. Like, oh, no, I don't want to put these in my mouth. So he puts them back into his asshole.
They've been lubricated with other people's shit. Horrible. It's like something out of 120 Days of Sodom.
That could cure him. It's his own homemade fecal transplant.
This was, I think, more disgusting than 120 Days of Sodom.
Was it worse than cows?
Actually, I think so. Like, I really do. I actually had that thought while listening to it. Like, I think this is this scene. I think this is worse than cows.
It's definitely the most famous scene in the book or the movie.
Oh my God, so disgusting. Was it the only disgusting? It wasn't the only disgusting scene, but it was the most.
There's some really funny phrases in here where he says, my jeans crumple to the deck and greedily absorb the urine.
Well, then he like throws away his clothes. He like uses his clean bits to wipe his ass off and then leaves.
Okay, I think I finally found it. This was much easier to listen to. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's hard to understand.
I empty my guts, feeling as if everything, bowel, stomach, intestines, spleen, liver, kidneys, heart, lungs, and fucking brains are falling through my arsehole into the bowl. As I shit, flies batter off my face, sending shivers through my body. So it's like...
We all know that feeling.
I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Like where you can't even like look at your phone, like shitting is a full-time job. Like you can't even be distracted during it. And then after the shit, then you piss. And you're like, oh my God, that was dire.
It's like squeezing. Right,
so this is gross. The book is mostly not men shitting, but this passage is clearly
that's the most
memorable
part. And it's one of the few parts where you're 100% sure of what's going on by the end of the chapter.
So that was like the second part. The third part, he goes over to shoot heroin again, or somebody does, a different main character. Who knows who it was?
it's really hard to tell for a whole chapter.
Yeah, it really is. They're over at the shooting gallery, and one of the women there has an infant, and they're just doing heroin, and then someone's like, the baby is dead. Like, the child has just died. And their first thought is like, oh shit, don't call the ambulance yet. We're going to get busted. Let us just leave first. But it's like, oh my God.
And it's clear, like, one of the guys is like, that might be my kid. And he's like, I feel really bad about this.
Yeah. It might be Sick Boy. Sick Boy is the one who is a junkie, but also is banging all the ladies.
Yeah, and then the woman is freaking out, and then they're all, you know, they're all worried about themselves, and then she... You know, at a certain point, predictably, one of them was like, I need heroin to deal with this shit. And then she's like, can I get, I need some. And the nice guy's like, oh yeah, I'll fix you up a shot. Me first, though. That's how the chapter ends. It's like, of course I will, but first for me. Come on, I'm not an idiot.
And then also in like a next scene where... one of their friends, he like who wasn't a junkie at all, was like broke up with his girlfriend, and was like, "I feel so bad. Can you let me just try that heroin one time? Let me just do it once." He's like, "Yeah, okay." And so like, "You're sure?" So then he gives him, you know, prepares it and gives him heroin, and then he becomes a junkie, and then later in the book dies of AIDS. So. Which is a lot in the second half of the book.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much of this was about HIV.
Or as they say there, HIV. I mean, that was, I guess we'll get to it later, why this book is important or why people like this book. I could see part of it was in 1993. It was like that time when all of a sudden like much more mainstream things talked about AIDS and HIV and stuff like that. It's like right around there that Tom Hanks got AIDS and...
he's doing pretty good, you know.
Magic Johnson had AIDS. Everyone had AIDS. Rent was coming out soon.
It's around the time that straight white guys started getting it.
Straight white guys?
Yeah. when it was just called gay cancer. Like, yeah, it's killing them. Whatever. They deserve it.
Yeah, they need to stop just doing whatever they do, honey, that I don't do sometimes.
Yeah, it's God's will, do you know? I don't know. I'm not a science doctor.
God just hates stewardesses. He wants a whole female flight crew again. Because you remember that.
Yeah. I mean, the book is hard. You can't really go through the plot because there's like six different characters all doing their own thing. And it's not really, there's no overall plot other than like the passage of time as they do stuff. And they're all doing weird things and just being depraved assholes. And it's kind of odd.
Maybe it'd be helpful to introduce some of the just other characters then.
I don't remember which one's which.
So one of the more significant characters that stuck out is Begbie.
Begbie, fucking yes.
Rage-filled lunatic.
Yeah.
Who is always, like, I like when he's first introduced that he's trying to pick up foreign women. He's, like, saying or thinking really racist shit about banging, like, an Asian woman. And how, it's like, which one of you is going to get Begbie's dong? He's just, like, gross. But everyone just tolerates him because he's a fucking violent maniac. And so...
It's good to have the psycho on your side.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's going to instigate several, like, bits of plot of, like, something's happening in this chapter. It's because Begbie's either fighting with somebody or trying to steal from somebody.
Hmm.
So he's a character. There's a Spud... who is Rent's friend, Mark's friend.
I have no idea which one Spud is. I know there's Spud and Danny. Danny the one that dies of AIDS?
Well, see, they all have multiple names. So
Danny
like some chapters
is
they
Spud.
Yeah, so there's chapters where they call him Rent, then they'll call him Renton, Rent Boy, and Mark, and it's all the same guy, so you have to like remember that. Spud is Daniel Murphy, apparently. So he's Daniel, Danny, Spud. He's the one that goes to jail.
Oh, okay.
And then there's Begbie, who is also apparently Franco, which is funny because his name is Francis. And Franco was also a fascist, and this guy has those tendencies of just violence, and
yeah,
nobody likes him. Davey is the one that gets HIV.
Oh, right, okay. That's close to Danny.
It is.
Which didn't make it any less confusing.
And then there's Sick Boy, who doesn't have AIDS, but maybe does, like he refuses to get tested, right? Or something like that. Is that when they call him that?
I think so.
He's the one that picks up all the women.
Even though he is basically a full-time heroin addict. Like a few of the other guys are not, like Begbie is not a drug user at all. He's just
he's
psycho.
Drunk.
And there's one or two women in there who have a few chapters.
Oh no, Tommy is the one that dies, that like is the friend who asks to try heroin after his girlfriend dumps him.
Hmm. It's really hard to keep track. This is like a fantasy book with family trees, but it's just six guys at the same time.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. Ooh.
Six guys at the same time.
Yeah, fantasy.
That's Five Guys After Dark.
I mean, you take that bathroom shit.
Yeah, it's me in the bathroom after I have five guys. It's six guys at the same time. Speaking of six guys at the same time, our patrons picked this book.
Yeah, at least six of them.
Six of them did, maybe more. I think this won by a fucking clear margin this month.
It won by a good margin.
And if you want to support the podcast, first of all, you should help us out by just leaving a good review. Every bad review hurts my feelings very badly.
I don't read them.
I mean, I do read them, and I agonize over them. Thank God, why did Nate do that? but leave a five-star review. But if you want to help, you want to go the extra mile, because you're like addicted to this podcast, you go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub and support us there, and you can vote for the book poll, join us for live things, get exclusive content, all sorts of shit. But most importantly, get thanked for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again.
You would see the biggest
true
gift is from us, and it's heroin.
You're a pal and a confidant, yeah. So it's Jimmy's turn, I believe, to thank those people, right?
It is. So I'm going to thank these people, and these people that I'm going to thank are the ones who I'm reading that I'm going to thank. And they are Catherine, Dogfish Head Propaganda Bungler, Jeff, Avery, Black Rabbit of Inlay. This is an interesting name. Hudson Street was the best sitcom of the 1990s. Take that, Urkel. Punk-ass bitch.
Shots fired.
I never saw Hudson Street, but...
no one did. Yeah. It was on for one season. It was a fucking bomb.
Well, someone feels very strongly about Hudson Street.
Jimmy does. He said it.
Yeah, I did. It was me. I'll let you know when I see it. Carol, Colton, Emotional Support Burrito, Fuck 'em a Boobs Mike, Frederick,
okay,
Grace, Hayden, Joe P, Josh. Here's another long one. My fake names keep getting bigger while Patreon's character limit stays the same size. I finally understand what Mike deals with when he buys pants.
It's true. They have had the. They have to use like a non-Euclidean numbering for my
size. Ain't nothing but a number, according to
that's, Mark. Yeah, that's that. That's the Weird Al cover from Mark Kelly.
Oh, here's another interesting name. We got a lot of. I don't know how these parents are, but you know, something, drugs are fun, I guess. why didn't they hide Project 2025 in one of Mike's monologues where nobody would ever hear it?
It's true. Yeah.
2025
is also my BMI, you fucking fuck you.
Linda, Meep, Mr. Slotch, Pootang Clan, Spicy Wang of Solitude, Steven,
<That's new. laughs>
Thick Richard III, Ween, William,
the band,
and Zaphod Beeblebrox. Oh, and this person must be Irish because their name is an entire limerick. Let's see, here we go. There once was a podcaster from Queens who liked beer and guitar magazines. He got carpal tunnel syndrome from his Pornhub subscription and skipping to all the gay scenes.
That could be anybody. What? That's
like a bad boob job, curiously pointed.
Nice. Yeah.
What? Well, yeah, that's all the people we're going to thank that I just read there. Thank you, people whose names I read, and to other people who give us less money and don't get your name read. That's incentive, baby.
And thank you, patrons. You guys are the best patrons in the world.
This is like the first month Nate was off scot-free.
Yeah.
He's out of the eye of the hurricane.
I took the one that was mean about me down, too.
Oh, man. That's fine. I know I have to fuck her your boobs.
Nothing wrong with that.
We go way back.
It's more like the so front, if you want, but... so, this book is about heroin. but there are no heroes in it.
Are there
nor
ever?
Greeks.
I'm going to have a beer. Fuck this shit.
Have
you
a
know,
beer. He already always, put his fist in the shit.
They're looking for heroin. They're probably like, give me some of that juice. This beer's called Juice Force. I wasn't going to go to the store today.
Force.
And it's Juice Force IPA from Voodoo Ranger, which I think we've had before. It's this the best goddamn deal at Costco right now on beer. And it's a 9.5% alcohol hazy imperial IPA. Made with juice, maybe. Tastes like it.
Wait. Made from Voodoo Ranger? That's not a brewery. That's a...
Well, New Belgium has like a brand. I'm sorry, I misspoke. They have like a Voodoo Ranger's brand that has multiple iterations now.
Gotcha.
But it's New Belgium is the big thing.
Belgium, famously close to Scotland.
Closer than we are.
Relatively, yeah. Yeah.
Not that close, but you know, closer than we are.
That's good enough for me.
So there's just lots of adventures. Any particular ones stand out to you guys besides the guy having diarrhea? Because that was my favorite.
The guy, I forget who it was, but he wakes up in his girlfriend's bed at her parents' house, and he's found that he has shit and pissed himself in his sleep. And so he goes downstairs.
And puked.
And puked, yes.
The trifecta.
And so he bundles it all up so he can take it home and wash it, and her whole family is there. And they're like, please have breakfast. And he's like, I really got to go. I was like, no, have some breakfast. And let me take those sheets from you so I can wash. He's like, no, I really, I'll take them. And then her mother grabs them and yanks the blanket away. And in doing so, unleashes the shit, puke, piss storm onto all of them and their breakfast. And he's like,
splatters
I probably won't
it over everyone.
Yeah.
I believe that's what they call a full again. Scottish breakfast.
Yeah. Haggis in reverse.
It's haggis, yeah. Deconstructed haggis.
It's very avant-garde. But yeah, I don't remember which character that even was.
I like there's a girl. What the fuck's her name? The like goth girl that she's just like her uncle has died and they're at the funeral the house. I can't remember what the fuck her name was, but she's there and then all of a sudden I was like she sees the uncle. It's like she touches the body and he kind of twitches and he's warm. She's like, holy fuck, he's not dead.
And he's sweating.
Yeah, oh, he's sweating, right? And everyone's like, oh my God, it's a miracle. And the doctor goes like, no, he's definitely still dead. There's someone left the heating pad or heated blanket on underneath it.
Yeah.
And then one of the uncles like, he would have loved that bit. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Nate, I think you might know this because I don't, and you know science good. Can a dead body sweat?
Well, okay, good question. I mean, bodies are, people are mostly water, so when you die, that water's got to go somewhere.
But
so
you're sweating so you can self-regulate your temperature.
So I had the same thought, actually. Like, if you just warmed up a dead body, would it start to sweat?
Did you use one of the ones in your basement?
I tested this.
It wasn't about dogs.
I tested this on 3 subjects. I was thinking, like, I'm not sure that would actually work, but at the same time, that water is going to leave your body eventually. So I guess you could just start, like, leaking would be a better way to say it.
I mean, you do leak. I guess it depends on how long they've been dead. I got the impression that he died in that bed and they just left him there, which is pretty gross.
I think they had one of the old-timey at-home funerals. You know, they put him in the suit. And
yeah, but I mean, like, they must have had a state.
But he was still in the bed. My impression was that he had just died that morning and everybody was there and they just hadn't taken the body away yet.
It starts to smell pretty quick.
Yeah. Also, because if I understand correctly, when you die, your sphincter muscles cease clenching and then you just empty your bowels like pretty much immediately.
It's a myth that you like shit yourself when you die. I mean, it does happen, but it's really like, if there was a bunch of shit in there ready to come out, it's going to come out. But if it's like, if you took a big shit and then you die, you're not going to shit yourself again. There's got to be something in there.
Oh, good, because I was worried that after Elvis died taking a shit, he took a second shit.
He shit all over his shit.
Yeah, yeah, the death shit. The last number two. Well, sweating is a process. I just Googled this. Is an active process, so that can't happen, but you can leak.
Like, yeah, your body still has a lot of water in it, so you can start to leach water out. That could happen, but it's not like your sweat glands are trying to cool yourself down.
But to the amateur observer, it could look like sweating, perhaps.
Okay, a second thing is, it's very humid in Scotland. In fact, I was just in Scotland a few weeks ago on a vacation. And in fact, I went to Edinburgh and I know the exact one in the chapter called Trainspotting when they're like literally like watching for the trains that are coming into Waverley Station. I was like, oh, I know exactly where that is. I watched those trains too. But anyway, it was so fucking humid there. It was like, even though the temperature wasn't hot for the summer, it was still like incredibly hot and just sweated entirely the whole time because it was so humid. Anyway, so it's also because it's so humid out, and so maybe the body was just cold and then it was like attracting condensation.
It's possible.
Which doesn't quite make sense because it wouldn't be colder than the ambient temperature.
What if there was a sudden shift in barometric pressure? We could really overscience this.
Anyway, didn't quite make sense. Also, this book is fiction, so it's like, that is... Although, actually, here's a question. Is it fiction, or is this stuff that Irvine Welsh actually kind of knows about?
I believe it is. He lived in this kind of world, at least for a little while. He was a heroin addict as a young man, playing in punk bands.
He was a heroin addict?
That's what I read somewhere, because I wondered the same thing. I was like, well, where else would he get these ideas? In Welsh's early 20s, he was addicted to heroin for 18 months.
All right, so yeah, I guess it makes sense. I mean, it certainly seemed authentic. I mean, I don't know the details of a heroin addict lifestyle beyond like the stereotypes, but he seemed to know what he was talking about.
I don't think the details are, I mean, they hold up to what I know about other people's experiences. You know, the details change here or there, but like the gist is pretty accurate. So he may have changed enough details to protect the innocent, but I think it was more or less stuff from his life.
It's probably this book captures like the funny, interesting parts and doesn't necessarily always include the other 98%, which is horrific, disgusting lifestyle or lives that, like, I mean, like, it kind of glimpses on some of them, like when they go to the shooting galleries, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how often you have to use it when you're shooting. Like, I don't know. Do you need to do it every day? Like, how quick does withdrawal set in? I guess it depends on your addiction. Everybody's different, but I don't know.
The quality of what you get.
Yeah. I don't know how that works.
I think there's, you know, the book can be read in a way where it seems very funny because it's like, especially if you are disconnected from this world, you know, and it's like, oh my God, look at this ridiculous shit. But he does kind of gloss over some of like the mundane suffering of their lifestyles. Like there's a character, it's just like characters like, oh, she's been a prostitute for 6 months. Boom. Like that's just said and then moved on from. And like now something zany happens. Like those kind of details are just kind of, oh yeah. Like it's interesting in a book that's like so over the top. Like you could read between the lines to see like what other terrible things are happening to these characters. But maybe that's part of the point, is to show how just commonplace that kind of horribleness whenever it's going to become for these people.
Yeah, and it bounces back and forth like a little bit. There's a few, most of it's from Mark's perspective, like the stuff about like, why do people do heroin? Why does he do heroin in particular? Like, how did it get started? Like, what are the societal causes of heroin? And, you know, it's like, I don't know. No one knows. You can't just like sum it up. Like, there's no one reason. Yeah, the thing about like his fucking social workers and his shrinks that were always working with him after he gets busted here and there, because they get arrested all the time and like charged with like little things and go to jail for a tiny bit. And Mark was like in college, but instead of doing his classes, he spent all his money on drugs and hookers. And he says it's, you know, one of his shrinks was like, oh, it's because he feels alienated, and you do drugs because there's no point in living. It's like, sure, that might be for him. I don't know. I don't know if this book intended to be universal. Certainly, I don't think it's like,
I mean, he did, you know. I think in that, okay, in one section where he's talking about, maybe talking to the shrink, maybe a different slightly, or another section, he's like, oh, you know, and just life is this boring old thing where you like get a job, get married, have three kids and a house, and then boom, that's your whole life over. And he was like, so boring. It's almost like he was afraid of the like very conventional.
Yeah, for some people, that's definitely
standard thing. I mean, that's what he said. That doesn't mean that's why he did heroin, but that's what he said he was afraid of. Or not afraid of, not satisfied with.
Another character also says, like, you know, when you're not using, life's too complicated. You want all these different things, you got to do all this different shit, you know, but when you're addicted, the only thing you care about is getting high. So it's a very simple, straightforward existence. Very, you know, that's all I need. That's all I need right now. And it's easier in some ways, which is depressing, but I guess not untrue.
A couple of other things that happen.
A lot of things happen.
But also is like not that connected. There's the guy, is it Mark who like is at a bar and ends up picking up a girl and going home with her?
Yeah, that's
and
Mark.
Then it's a and then he discovered he like fucks her, and then she's like, no, you can't stay in here, and gives him after they fuck, gives him a like sleeping bag. He's like, go stay out there on the couch. He's like, okay. And then he wakes up in the morning and is like, who are these people cooking breakfast here? Are these your roommates? And then he's like, oh no, these are her parents. This is her house. And then she's, you know, wakes up in the morning and comes out. It's like, oh, this is a child. This is a 14-year-old. There was a line that says, oh yeah. And then she was wearing her makeup, making her look 16, 2 years older than her actual age. And he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's never a good look.
Nope. And he's like afraid of going to jail, as you would.
And then he does get busted for stealing books.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So he gets busted for stealing books, and he goes in front of the judge, and he and his friend were stealing books. And his friend's like, and their excuse is going to be, we weren't going to sell them for drug money. We were going to read them. And the judge asks him, so, okay, this book on, was it Kierkegaard?
It's Kierkegaard, yeah.
Kierkegaard. There's a book on Kierkegaard. So what is your opinion on Kierkegaard? And Mark is like, well, it's like an amazing answer where he clearly knows all about it, has all these things. And the judge is like, yeah, okay, enough. And then the other guy. And so Mark doesn't go to jail. And the other guy who doesn't know anything about Kierkegaard is just like, I don't know. And then the other guy goes to jail.
It's hard to tell sometimes if things were really happening in these. Like, did he really give that answer? It felt kind of surreal at times. Or like,
this is an unreliable narrator situation. Yeah, where it's like, honestly, this is what I should have said. I should have said blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know what you mean. That is kind of true.
It was genuinely confusing.
Another really gross section was when the random female protagonist, I have no idea what her name is.
The bartender?
Yeah, at the bar where the really, like, the assholes come in, and she's like, you know what? It's just never piss off your waitress.
The English guys.
And then she just, oh my God, that was very gross.
Well, you didn't say what it was.
No. and all I could think was, okay, when I was in Edinburgh, I always was very polite to the waitresses.
Well, that's because in the book, she pisses in their food and drinks. A lot of piss. And she talks about how she's getting a UTI because her piss is cloudy. Can you get a UTI in your neck? It's a wet tube.
Okay, so a UTI is urinary tract, and you don't have one of those in your neck.
But you have, it's a similar environment. Can the infection spread?
I'm sure if you're HIV positive, you can get kind of infection you want. There was also the chapter where, and I don't know which person it was, it's like basically got revenge on the guy for giving his girlfriend AIDS, but then that was also what gave him AIDS by like pretending to kill the kid, to kill the guy's.
Oh, that child? Guy was dying of AIDS in a hospice, and so the girl was his girlfriend. Or no, it was a friend of it, like a lady he was like friends with, he became friends with to like get back at him, and pretended to kill his son by taking pictures of him using like, you know, movie makeup, and then told the guy that he killed his son, and then murdered him, even though he was already in hospice and dying of AIDS. And I don't know what fucking character that was.
Nope.
It's really hard to tell.
I don't either.
If no one says like, oh, hey, sick boy, then like,
oh, hey, rent boy here. If it doesn't start with that, then I have no idea who
that,
it was.
Because that guy, like the other characters in that chapter are not characters in the rest of the book, really. So it's hard to find the relationship. Maybe it is known. I don't know.
And then there's the guy who died of toxoplasmosis.
I think that was someone like talking shit. Like, can an adult die of that? It causes miscarriages.
Well, if you have full-blown AIDS.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
If you have full-blown AIDS.
That's a really complicating factor.
Then you can die of literally anything.
Yeah. Toxoplasmosis, yeah. For those that don't know, that's what you get from infected cats sometimes get it. You get it from like cat litter. So pregnant women are not supposed to clean cat litter boxes, because it can cause miscarriages if your cat gets it. If the cat's never left the house, you're probably fine. But it's a contagion. Also, feline AIDS is a feline HIV or FIV is airborne. So you have to get your cats vaccinated before you let them out of the house.
Wow.
It's fucked up. So before we talk about did we like it, or do we talk about do we like it first and then why it's important, or something, or the other way around, which makes sense? I don't know.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about it? Is that there's a Scots Gaelic entry for this on Wikipedia.
Okay, like, that makes sense.
Trainspotting is the first novel by Scottish writer Irvin Welsh.
It tacks the form o' a collection. It's like written in the dialect.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. The novel has since achieved a cult status, added tay by the global success owed the film.
You sound like
film.
Someone who read about pirates in a book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A novel that serves as a prequel, Wiz published. That was the best part. There's a trade spotting in Scott's Wikipedia.
Oh, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah. It's much shorter than the actual English language entry, but that was my favorite thing.
Oh, we should mention it's called Trainspotting because
there's this one scene where they're like in Edinburgh and they're like going to take the train at Waverley, and there's a place, so there's like a bridge and you can see the trains coming into the station and they're just like, hey, there are the trains. That's kind of it.
Apparently, something else happened in like that scene. It's slang for either it means like it was like a hobby for nerds, but it was like, you know, people who get really, really into something, like hyper focused, like, ah, they could tell which train it is by looking, oh, that's a 57B or some shit. And like people who are obsessive about one thing. But also it could mean people do heroin down by the train tracks. That's a thing you do there. Like homeless people gather and they do heroin, junkies. So train spotting is a euphemism for heroin usage.
I'd say the British Isles come up with some very poetic slang.
Oh man, I was hanging out with a British guy this week, and he had a few real nice lines where it was like someone telling him like crazy shit that they did, like I did something dumb, and he's like, I can't recommend that behavior. Like, oh, damn. Just like, I'm going to think about that forever now.
It's like accidentally brilliant. It's like accidental Bronson? Did I ever tell you guys about this?
It sounds familiar.
Do you know who Action Bronson is?
Yeah.
He's Bronson, this rapper who has like dumb song. He's like fucking this fat Albanian guy.
In the morning, do karate underwater. He's from Queens.
He has a song called Johann Sebastian Baklava.
He's also, in addition to being a rapper, he is a chef.
Oh, he looks like he's a chef.
He's like a big time, like really into like cooking and does, he has like a, he had a show called Fuck That's Delicious.
It was on Vice, yeah.
Yeah.
They filmed an episode of that. They filmed it was like all Queens. And there was a place right by where I used to live in this like, you know, Orthodox Jewish Buharian area. And I was like, oh, I always assumed that place just sold like Judaica. I didn't know there was food in there. And then I went to check it out, and then the entire block burned down for some definitely not insurance scam. I found out, I was like, oh, damn you, Action Bronson. But there's a...
Literally blowing up their spot.
I'm sure he blew it up beforehand, too.
Yeah, he's a big
deal. It's like, you almost hit that bowl. There's a Twitter account called Accidental Bronson, where it's like when people tweet like a weird line that sounds like one of his lyrics. It says like, I'm watching the Toronto Raptors here in Italy. It's like, that sounds like from one of his songs.
It really, Nate, if you've never heard one of his songs, it doesn't make much sense, but if you've ever heard one of his songs, it makes absolute sense.
Johann Sebastian Baklava is fucking hysterical. What was the question?
So why is this book big or important? I don't know if it's important. Why? Why is book?
Is that Scots Gaelic? Is that what you're saying? Right?
Why is it book?
I mean, if for a book in 1993, so it's both about like Scotland, it's about heroin, and it's about AIDS. So like this is, you know, in 1993, not only was AIDS a like really big like worldwide issue, but it was like just becoming a worldwide issue. I mean, it was an issue before, but the 90s was even bigger. So that would make it a very important book. And it's not just it's about the people who are getting it from injecting drugs. Though there's also some gay stuff in the book, but it is mostly not about that.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, that's like it's like really important issue. And it was long listed for the Booker.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was. And the Wikipedia page says that it offended two of the judges, so it did make it to the shortlist. Yeah. Trainspotting was long listed for the 1993 Booker Prize, was apparently rejected for the shortlist after quote, offending the sensibilities of two judges. Well, there's a lot to be offended at in the book, so I can see that.
I did not love this book, but I think it's better than a lot of the current Booker nominees. And I can see it being a Booker. Yeah. It's a very, you know, it is creative. It's different. It's very weird, experimentally, and it's about, you know, a great cause of the time. Not anymore, because we know we cured AIDS for people that people care about in the first world.
Well, there's now the PrEP and shit like that, where you can't spread.
Yeah, it's not as much of an issue in places where they read the book awards.
I just reminded this before I forget. The title is also kind of a joke because the train station that they go to, like the Leith Central Station, doesn't run anymore. So like, there's no train spotting to be done there. Like there's, it seems like a very British joke. But I was just reminded of that. It's a book of its time, but it's still worth reading now. I mean, it's entertaining now. It just has, it hits different.
Yeah, it's not as topical anymore. Though the issue of
drug addiction,
drug abuse has not decreased by any means. So there is that. But I don't know. Probably in 1993, it was revolutionary.
It's definitely transgressive. But
yeah, but it's like when you read things that were transgressive, like music that was transgressive or anything that was transgressive 30 years ago, it's passé now. Like you can get a million books about like brutally depressing graphic drug addiction. It's everywhere.
Well, the thing about transgression is it goes past the moment, but that's always changing. So like, was it
transed the grass?
It identified as a different kind of grass. But the, what the fuck, Pygmalion, right? That was like, people were offended because it said like, not bloody likely was a line in the play. And people were like, how dare he? But, you know, that was offensive to say bloody, like, oh, what an inappropriate for the stage thing. I don't know. I mean, I feel like after, I mean, there's like a punk rock vein or like element of the book. Like there's, as an ingredient or something like that, I guess, which is all very transgressive, you know, offensive, purposely offensive, yeah. Purposely outré.
I mean, I guess you could ask the question, is it meant to offend or is it meant to say, this is really what it's like? If you're offended, then that's on you, but these things are real. I'm not making shit up. Pointing out that something exists shouldn't offend you.
Well, I mean, I don't know. When you say to someone, your baby's ugly, it's kind of offensive.
It shouldn't be offensive. That's a statement of fact.
It's like the, Jack Handy had a line, Lori got offended when I used the word puke, but to me, that's what her dinner tasted like. I don't think this book was meant to be offensive. I think it was meant to be... to draw attention to something, perhaps, but I don't think it was meant to be like, ooh, I'm edgy. You know, I don't think it was.
Like, the idea that the two judges were offended, it reeks of British bullshit, like, oh, vulgarity. When it's like, no, fuck you.
I wonder who the judges were in 1983, like how fucking old those people were.
And how upper-class British they were.
How stiff was their upper lip?
What won in 93? I don't even know. Oh, Roddy Doyle won. Roddy Doyle won for Patty Clark, ha ha ha, in 1993. Or was this the year after or the year before? Was it like the Oscars where they're off by a year?
It said the 1993 Booker Prize.
The winner in 1983 is Patty Clark, ha ha, which is about being poor and Irish. I'm like, oh, okay.
I read his The Commitments, which was pretty funny, pretty good. But I've never read his other stuff. I've heard he's like really good, but I've only read the one because we have to read so many of these fucking books.
We could kill ourselves. We could stop this anytime.
we could just die.
We could start doing heroin. Death. This podcast doesn't need to read anymore.
Until we die, we have to read every Booker nominee forever.
We know, though. You know what? One of my sick goals is to read all of the old nominees, too. So anytime, like, oh, sweet.
Old nominees?
Like the short lists from the past years, too, yeah.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with you?
It's so much. But...
that's stupid. I'm not going to do that.
I'm not saying we have to do it.
I have to do it, or I have to like snap a rubber band against my wrist for hours at nighttime and masturbate with a piece of steel wool.
Complete the list.
Yeah, it's 100% about completing the list. I know that. But whenever I find, like, oh wait, that's one off the list. Oh boy, is that a happy day in my household.
Sisyphean. So yeah, 1993. This was a big thing.
It's
now I would say maybe not as big, but I don't know. In terms of liking it, I didn't love it, if only because it was very hard to keep track of what was happening. Like sometimes prohibitively so, but that was maybe on me to a certain extent, but. I don't know.
But that was a feature, not a bug, right? The language part of the book.
And well, not the language. Like I got used to the language. The part that was hard for me was like, who is talking? Whose chapter is this? Some I don't know if they were even characters in other parts of the book.
See, this is where we test my Booker rubric theory. Experimental books get extra, like, get bumped up, you know, and not knowing what's going on is experimental.
Yeah. Is the reader confused? That's a plus.
I think, what if we take a themes approach? Ooh, that thing that doesn't exist in the real world, but English teachers tell you does. The thing like that ties them together, I'm just making this up right now, but I'm pretending I'm in a classroom, is their addiction and their dysfunction and their shittiness. But how did you guys talk about how the book ends? Like what Mark does? No. Nate, do you remember?
Nope.
Somehow they steal a bunch of money, and then they steal a bunch of drugs, and then they go to sell it to a guy, and then Mark steals all the money and dips.
And it ends with his optimism. Like, now I'm going to be perfect. I'm going to fix myself. The only way for
him... Nelson says, like, and I can never go back to Scotland or anywhere in the UK, because they will kill me. And so that's his new life.
But the only way to escape this is through betrayal. He has to stab his friends in the back. There's got to be something there. There's a paper in there. Come on. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I mean, like, he has a whole thing about how, like, some of these people aren't his real friends. Some of these people are terrible.
Almost nobody's their friend.
Common interest.
They're bound, but, yeah. So they don't even know what friendship is. I don't know. I feel like there's also something about the book maybe meant to, like, human. I mean, we've even been guilty of it. I know I have been in the podcast of, like, referring to people as junkies, which is pretty dismissive and humanized.
It's not the preferred nomenclature, nor is addict anymore.
Not the preferred nomenclature, dude. Right. people of junk, but they are, like, we're not, you know, it really diminishes the human aspect.
Drug users.
The human suffering aspect of that. I mean, well, be careful, because there are also then people who think, like, addiction is not a problem to be solved, and I think those people are, like, fucking ridiculous.
That's, no.
No. I mean, they're right up there with, like, the NAMBLA guys. They're like, what? What's wrong with it? Spartans did it. There is, you know, this is it's very tempting. It's very easy to be like, those people are not, like, below our radar of humanity.
That could also definitely be a product of the 90s in that they needed humanizing. I mean, certainly today, still, it's still an issue. Like, we just think of them as junkies and outcasts and, like, they're no good for anything.
They failed. It's a moral
failing.
Especially in America.
More commonly, you know, people understand that addiction is a disease. And it is, like, not necessarily, it's not like it's not their fault, you know, they did nothing, like it, but it's more complicated than they're choosing to just be, you know, addicts and worthless junkies. It's more than that. So, I mean, there are still plenty of people who don't think they're anything more than human garbage. But I think generally there's been progress on that front, at least, of understanding that they're people with a serious issue.
Right. No, I agree with that 100%. And I think things like this may have been influential in tipping that to some minor degree.
It's been 30 years.
It's a lot of horse, man.
So I really liked the book, or more like, I think it's a really well-written book, but it was hard to get through. Because, like, how many other books can you think of that can go between incredibly sad and incredibly funny and incredibly gross, like pretty much like every other chapter. And it's like, I can't think of any other book that can do that.
No, it definitely bounces around.
And the dialect was like, so I actually listened to it. So, and the dialect was also, because I was in Scotland, I heard a lot of Scottish.
You could translate.
I was like, it wasn't too hard to understand for me. Now, at the same time, reading it out on the page, probably been a lot harder.
I mean, have you seen it at all? Like any of the?
I have not seen the movie. No.
I mean, have you like looked at the book? Like read any of the words?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if it's I insane. Listen to it, listening it's to it totally would make more sense. Like reading it, it was fucking hard at times to be like, "What is this?" And you get used to it, but it does take some real like work of trying to get some of the stuff. Not, you know, it's not like twice as long, but it's like you have to really concentrate on sentences that are not complicated. It's not grand thoughts. It's not translating philosophy. It's just like, then I took a shit. It's like, whoa, what are these words?
What does this mean? Yeah. So, which I think is inventive and interesting, but you know, it's sad, really sad and really funny. And like, that's so hard to do.
Yeah. It had a little something for everyone. I honestly, the only thing I docked it, you know, internet points for, I just literally telling who was telling each chapter was really, really confusing. And it was happening. Was it happening out of order in time? I don't know. Or like it jumped around randomly and it was really hard to follow at times. And that it
was
like, I could translate the shit, but like at a certain point it says like, I don't even know whose chapter this is about or who they're talking to. And if you have to work at that, you're not really going to get like the fucking themes of the meaning of the book. You don't know who's talking.
Yeah. I didn't mind that as much, almost because I didn't care. I was kind of like, oh, this is just another weird story.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, there's no, I mean, there's a plot, but there's no like, they have to bring the ring to Mordor type of plot. So it's just kind of like, it doesn't really matter. You don't have to remember every chapter to understand what's happening in the next chapter. So it was like, yeah, whatever.
If you look at the Wikipedia, I looked at the Wikipedia entry just to be like, let me see what the plot is just so I can like remember it and get this going. They only summarized the last chapter, basically, where it's like, it's probably a bunch of guys using drugs and then they show up in London and they sell the drugs. Like, that's none of the book.
Because the book is really a short story collection.
Yeah. A smattering of vignettes.
I'm not sure if we said this, but I think another thing that's...
A spotting of vignettes.
Mm.
Is that like a pride of lions?
A spotting of trains.
They're all from like... There's all, like something wrong with all of their families and lives. Like you get little snippets of backstory and... Anytime you meet a character's parents or something like that, you're always like, oh, they're fucked up in some way. You know, like there's no, like it's all dysfunction. So there's could be potentially like a, I don't know, I don't want to say a class thing per se, but like there's like, you know.
This doesn't happen in a vacuum.
I think there's just lots you could read into the book. It might be on the one hand, you could be like, oh, these are a bunch of just zany things. But on the other hand, you'd be like, wow, there's like richness and depravity and sadness and whatever, but it's an interesting read. I don't regret reading it.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I don't know if I'd say you must read Trainspotting though.
Probably not. Must is a strong word.
Well, no, I mean that kind of implies addiction.
Yeah.
I do want to watch the movie again, just because it's been like 20 years since I've seen it. So I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been a very long time.
And there are sequels and prequel books. Would you be interested in reading any of those? How's that?
I don't know. I mean, what is there to sequel or prequel in this? Like, there's no... It's just like the same characters doing other shit? Like, I don't know.
It's
I don't know how much...
Different phases of life. I think the most recent sequel, they're like in their 40s. To see what happened. Like, where are they now?
I don't even know what they were doing in this one.
That's not a good start.
And there's like two or three of them. I was like, I get the arc of this guy, but like, you know, when they're like, oh, 20 years later, it's like, which one was he again? I don't know.
I suspect you probably wouldn't need to remember. I think they'll tell you.
Or
you
no, probably not. If it's just more of this, I you know, I'm sure it's good. I'm sure it's well written. I don't know what purpose it would serve me. Being selfish.
Something none of the characters in the book can understand.
No, nothing.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us at Twitter at... Fuck that. No one goes there. Go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to support us or give us a 5-star review. That's better. We're addicted to those.
And go to Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Guys Book Club and Goodreads.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you write Goodreads in Scottish, it says Goodreads, but you pronounce it wrong.
Goodreads.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.
Quant.